Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. If there's a trade publication out there covering the business of music or entertainment, you can probably guarantee that it either A, is owned by the Penske Media Corporation, B, has taken an investment from the Penske Media Corporation, or C, is probably on their watch list of a company that they're keeping an eye out for. Jay Penske, the billionaire son of former race car driver Roger Penske, who's also the namesake for the Penske trucking business, has built a portfolio of brands in music, entertainment, and more. One of the earliest deals was back in 2009, when Penske acquired Deadline, the Hollywood trade publication, for several million dollars. And then in 2012, Penske acquired Variety for $25 million, a number that seems laughable thinking about how these valuations have evolved today. The current portfolio includes Rolling Stone, a majority investment was made in 2017 and a full acquisition in 2019. Billboard and Hollywood Reporter, which are part of a $225 million deal in 2020. Penske Media also owns Vibe, made a strategic investment in 2020 in Music Business Worldwide, made a $100 million investment for a 20% stake in Vox Media, and it also owns Alpha Data. It owns IndieWire, TV Line, Gold Derby, Women's Wear Daily. It bought a controlling stake in South by Southwest in 2021 and also ventured into TV with Dick Clark Productions, which currently hosts and puts on the Golden Globes. This is a roster that's set up not unlike a record label. It's a collection of in-house brands and platforms that can compete with each other for the same types of stories. Variety, Billboard, Music Business Worldwide, and even Rolling Stone to a extent can compete for scoops in the same way that Interscope and Republic and Capitol Records can all compete for talent and market share under the Universal Music Group umbrella. It's a fascinating case study on buying low and buying brands that have cachet and relevance with their audience but may not have the revenue to generate it, and strengthening the mix of revenue through events and subscriptions and advertising and being able to sell that across the entire business. It's a big topic, and to break down big topics, you have to have the best people to break it down with. And today, we're joined by Bill Wordy. He's the director of the Bandier Program of Recording and Entertainment at Syracuse's Newhouse School. And he's also the former editorial director of Billboard, where he worked for over 10 years. And he's the author of the Full Rate No Cap newsletter, where he breaks down the honest truth behind the business. And before he was at Billboard, he worked at Rolling Stone. So in many ways, this is the perfect person to be able to talk to about this. We talked about the pros, the cons of the consolidation, trends in media, the for-your consideration business, and which company we think is next to get acquired by the Penske Media Corporation. Bill's answer may surprise you. Well, it probably won't surprise you, but you should listen to it anyway. And here's the episode. Hope you enjoy it. All right. Today, we're going to do a deep dive on the Penske Media Corporation and its influence in the publications in music and entertainment. And today we have someone I've wanted to have on the show for a while, Bill Wordy. Welcome.
It's so cool to be here. Long time a fan of Trapital, obviously. I'm hoping we can have a great conversation and I can still maintain some of my friends at Penske Media, which I have a world of respect and love for.
You have a unique perspective with this because you were editorial director at Billboard. Penske Media has acquired a lot of the entertainment companies. What's your take on all of this? How has it been for you to see this evolve over time?
Well, I think that if you look at the last, let's say, 3, 4, or 5 years, on an individual basis, I think each of these titles that Penske Media owns has been honestly doing some of its best work. You know, Hannah Karp at Billboard, Jason Lipschitz at Billboard, of course, you know, Ed Christman, Glenn Peoples at Billboard, Tim Ingham at Music Business Worldwide, which Penske has a stake in, the incredible work that Shirley Halperin did that Jem Aswad is now continuing at Variety Music. I want to shout out Nikesa at The Hod Reporter, too. They're as strong as they've ever been, if not in some situations stronger. What I've also not been bashful about is that consolidation does create some questions. I don't think it's inherently healthy for virtually every mainstream music business coverage. The largest platforms are owned by one entity. I think it does raise some questions about conflict of interest. I think it raises some questions about what happens when there is financial incentive to not cover a story. If an important business partner of Penske Media lets it be known that it would be better if maybe this didn't receive a ton of attention, well, in theory, if someone wanted to make that call, and I am not saying that someone has, but if someone wanted to make that call, suddenly you're sort of blacking out virtually, what, like 80, 90% of the eyeballs of music industry coverage? And I think that's a little bit concerning.
I want to talk about the first part of what you said. Hey, there's a lot of great work that's been happening. Do you think that that's the standard that it's always been, or do you think that things have gotten better under the Penske umbrella?
I can speak best to Billboard, because obviously that's where, you know, I spent a lot of my career. And I think Billboard has always been really two different businesses, and on some level, three different businesses. You know, the two different businesses clearly are the business coverage side and then the consumer coverage side, right? Like Billboard.com, it hadn't really existed. And that was such a huge opportunity in the brand. And then, you know, the third business would be the Billboard Music Awards, which you could kind of lump in with the consumer business if you want to. We brought that back as well in partnership with ABC, and it created this incredible tentpole, this incredible discrete business on the consumer side. And then, of course, the first business is just all the business coverage. You know, Billboard, the print magazine, which is generally geared towards business, and the business coverage that exists online, which at the time was Billboard.biz and is now Billboard Pro. And so if you ask, like, is it better? Is it worse? Is it the same? I think that I was very fortunate to be there at a time when we had a team of people that felt like they were on a mission. You know, when I got there, Billboard was in this moment where file trading really was killing the recorded music business. Every year, there were thousands of new layoffs. The business was dropping by 5 to 10% year over year. And all of those layoffs and all of that shrinkage, I mean, those were our readers. And I think a lot of the coverage of Billboard at the time really was sort of apologist for the major labels. And it hadn't moved quickly enough to understand fully the new technologies, what the new technologies were going to mean. And ultimately, because of that, like who our new audience was going to be. We started being very strategic about who that audience was. And so we started covering a lot of these spaces, music and branding, music and technology, streaming, like in a way that, you know, Billboard hadn't dedicated resources before and or hadn't been smart enough before. And I'm just being honest, like, you know, when I got there, we were selling a print magazine for like $400 a year, but basically we were writing the same stories that like the Wall Street Journal was running the next day, and they were doing a better job of it, right? And we're charging people $400 for the privilege of reading that same story 9 days later. And it was just not a good model. And so, you know, I think we did incredible work chronicling this industry during this moment of transition from the CD era to the streaming era. I think they have put more resources into having like more smart, dynamic people covering more smart, dynamic parts of the music business. When I was out at Billboard in 2014, they moved me into a nebulous role that was meant to like advise on like media and entertainment acquisitions. They thought that like these brands, Billboard and the Hollywood Reporter, had an opportunity to be like cable companies, that had an opportunity to be like cable brands. And, you know, if you were paying attention to which way the wind was blowing with like carriage fees and the dollars that were not going to cable companies, to cable brands anymore, I didn't share that vision. I didn't believe in that vision. So it made sense to make the move. I respect any business that makes a decision, right, that has a strategy and goes for it. I didn't think it was the right strategy. And if you look at that period and you look at some of the things that they tried, I think you've seen that they've basically come back to the model that we built back then, which is like do incredible work covering the business, which establishes your credibility and gets you to the front of the line when it comes to your artist relationships. Do incredible work on the consumer side that's much more fan-focused. Lean into the Billboard Music Awards. That's where the brand is today, by and large. And international licensing, I have to say. I do question the relevance of some of the more consumer brands. I have great friends, people I absolutely love at Rolling Stone, and this is not a criticism of their work. But do I think Rolling Stone is relevant? Do I think Rolling Stone shapes the conversations the way it did, you know, 10, 15 years ago? I think it's hard very, very hard to make that argument. And again, maybe not as much to do with Rolling Stone as it does to do with the way people have conversations today.
I'm curious about the business side of things, because when we take a step back and look at the Penske model more broadly, a lot of people have looked at this as an opportunity to buy these businesses at a low price, and seeing that the influence and the cachet that these brands have exceed the revenue, what they're currently doing. So they see this as an opportunity to enhance that. And some of the things that we've seen in a lot of these businesses is an increase in events, an increase in subscriptions, and different ways to tweak the model. Some of this isn't unique to the Penske businesses. We've seen a lot of evolutions of media business models over the past few years, especially pre and post pandemic. But what's your take on that?
Business models for all media companies are certainly, yes, shifting radically, quickly, and they have to, because so many ad dollars are migrating to social platforms, and specifically TikTok and YouTube. It's also about the rise of the influencer, the rise of wanting your ad dollars to go where the conversations are going, which just kind of cuts out sometimes this top-down approach to thought leadership and reporting. How low will ad dollars in traditional media places go? And if they really do dry up, is there enough left to sustain these businesses? These titles, even independent of Penske, if you take like a 6, 7, 9 year view, have generally been going through fairly consistent tightening. Some of that's certainly strategic, right? Every time there's a layoff, if we think about like major labels, it's never, hey, we're spending too much money, we need to spend less. It's always, we're going to reinvest in other parts of the company. And, you know, sometimes that's actually true. These businesses, these brands, they're fighting for their life. The media climate is incredibly challenging. I think they're providing an important service. I think I always question anyone who wants to dance on the grave of any business model, anyone who takes any, you know, joy and Freude at, you know, some other business not succeeding. You know, I think the world of the music industry would be a much worse place if Billboard and Variety and Music Business Worldwide weren't doing the work that they're doing. So I hope they are able to figure it out. I hope that, you know, that they're able to be viable. I will say this, and it's interesting, you know, we're having this conversation here on Trapital, and, you know, you've built this incredible audience, this engaged audience, this audience that trusts you. You're one person, and I'm sure you have other folks that help here and there, and you probably outsource some things, but like at the end of the day, you're a team of one, and you've captured a meaningful amount of mind share in the music business. And, you know, Sherry Hu at Water and Music has captured a really important mind share of the music business. The point here is, I actually think it's an advantage to build from the ground up than it is to build from the top down.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think it's been good to see those models as well, knowing Sherry or Rob Avalo.
Yeah, Rob's great.
And plenty others that have had independent voices. One thing that I did want to talk about with you is, you've done a good job at 48 No Cap highlighting why it's important to elevate these independent voices because of conflicts of interest. Are there topics that you think that you would expect to see glossed over from a Penske Media company entity, or the analysis can be a bit more direct if it's coming from an independent outlet covering the space?
I'm not making any direct accusations of wrongdoing on the part of Penske Media or anyone, but I will speak to the questions that this sort of scenario can raise. And I'll give you some examples. More often than not, that doesn't show up in coverage. It shows up in a lack of coverage, right? When you put yourself out there and you write some glowing report on something that isn't deserving of glowing, you really kind of expose yourself as lacking integrity. But if you just sort of choose to look the other way on some things that maybe require greater scrutiny, you really don't open yourself up as much. The biggest question that I would have in that vein would be, what, for my money, is one of the biggest, most important stories facing the music industry, and that's investment dollars flowing from Saudi Arabia. I think this is a massively important story that speaks, I'm gonna paraphrase Joe Biden here, and I'm sorry for the Trumpers out there, but it speaks to the soul of the music business a little bit. Right. If we think about the music business, we think about a bunch of individuals, certainly, that want to be on the cutting edge of social justice, racial justice, justice in general, equity. You know, this is an industry that loves to post things on social media, loves to talk about making the world a better place. you can't do that with a straight face and not ask really important questions about dollars that are coming in from Saudi Arabia. If I search for like the hard news analysis on Saudi Arabia dollars coming into America and questions that should be asked about Saudi dollars and the music industry, I'm not finding a bunch of deep dive reports on Billboard, which is where I would expect to see that kind of analysis. And again, maybe they've been published and I missed them. I will note, it was reported that Penske got $200 million from a Saudi fund. I think it's especially important right now because clearly, you know, there's that big industry conference that goes on in Riyadh that is getting bigger every year. And in the last year or two, it's been clear, I mean, abundantly clear, that that conference is greasing the wheels so that, you know, influencers in the West are attending that conference and then sharing a ton about it on social media. And everything is like rosy and amazing when influencers have their trip paid for and get treated like royalty in Riyadh. Everything being shared from this conference is like, this is incredible. This is like so progressive. Like, look, women are empowered. And it's like, okay, but, you know, go read an objective report on human rights violations in Saudi Arabia.
It's a fair point. And it reminds me of some of the research I was doing before this. I know this is a topic that you and I could definitely do a whole episode on. Yeah. I do want to bring up another point. One thing I have noticed is there's definitely a coverage difference when it comes to leadership and different roles. I remember back in the 90s, you would see headlines that would say, Andre Harrell was fired from Motown Records. And you want to know why he was fired? Because of this reason, and that reason, right? And it's not that that stuff still doesn't happen now, but whether it's the PR and the publicist influence or the communication influence can just sugarcoat and dress these things up. But on the other hand, are we doing a disservice if people just hear through scuttlebutt what actually happened as opposed to more glossing reviews or things just not being reported on?
I think it's a funny observation, and I certainly agree with it. No one gets fired anymore, right? Everyone comes to
No one ever gets fired. Yeah, apparently,
no one ever gets fired. Everyone comes to a mutual decision all the time. It's amazing how many mutual decisions are made where in which one of those two parties who made the mutual decision is no longer employed.
This is the music industry exec level of the artist that just decided to postpone the tour because of personal reasons. And don't worry, I'll get back out
there. Yeah, that's exactly right. I think some of this is, you know, the music business. I think in some ways it's a small business, and with media proliferation and the ability to like spin and create stories in different pockets and in different places, I think people generally just want to play nice in the sandbox because it's not that big of a sandbox. And one thing that I think anyone paying attention to this business has learned is that second and third acts happen. And so, you know, you may want to protect that relationship, both in terms of, hey, I'm the company that you are making this mutual decision with. We want to keep a good relationship because I don't know what you're going to go do. You may walk out my door, and when our non-compete ends, you may, you know, maybe you were a label executive and now you're managing, you know, a massive artist that I desperately want to sign, right? Like, so I think some of it is just people have gotten smarter about that. Like, there's really no win in making anyone look bad in an industry of this size. And then I think some of it is, yes, we've all gotten a lot more media savvy. I think we all understand how to generate headlines, how to use the trades to our advantage. I mean, I do a very, very small scope, maybe one or two clients a year where everything lines up perfectly. But I play those games, right? Okay, well, I can put a story here and then I know these three outlets are going to echo it. If we're out first, then that'll become the narrative, and then everything responds to that narrative. I don't use my powers for evil. I use them for good. And even though, as we've been talking, I think like probably 70, 80% of the mindshare may be controlled by Penske Media, there's lots of different ways to get a story out there and make sure that when people Google you, which is what a lot of this is about, that they find something that is less scary than, you know, my dude got fired.
Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. Drake has dominated the headlines with this beef going on with Kendrick Lamar, but his Spotify monthly listeners are at 82 million as of May 7th, which is below the 85.1 million that he had on February 7th during his It Was All a Blur tour. Meanwhile, Drake's Wikipedia page had an average of 14,000 views per day in March and April, but on May 3rd, the day after Drake released Family Matters and Kendrick released Meet the Grams, Drake's views on that Wikipedia page jumped up to over 320,000 on May 3rd and over 337,000 on May 4th, both over 20 times more his usual daily views. So for Kendrick, this beef may be generating a lot of revenue, but for Drake, this beef may be generating a lot more clicks. Let's get back to the episode. One piece I do want to talk about that is core to the Penske model is the for-your consideration business. And what do all of these media, music, entertainment publications have in common? They are a very attractive place for each of these companies, whether it's record labels, production studios, that want to put in ads for people to help them win Oscars, Grammys, or Emmys to reach the voters, because many of these publications are B2B trade publications to reach that intended audience. And I do think that that has been a pretty strong place for the Penske model to work, because if you're thinking about what are the benefits of the consolidation, if you can have a near monopoly on the FYC advertising business, regardless of the ratings, whether they may go up or go down for the Oscars or the Grammys or the Emmys, you still own the business and the value that that has from a B2B entity and all of the benefits, whether some of it is legitimate, whether some of it is vanity, you being the sole place to be able to help generate those ad dollars. These entities in general were attractive for Penske to acquire or have a controlling stake in.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I would say that these are essentially viewed as very high percentage lottery tickets. You're directly reaching the voting audience, right? That has everything to do with this small number of people who have been sort of industry vetted and approved and qualified. I would actually argue, if I was running those campaigns, is that the actual best way to reach them would be like micro-targeting with paid media. But it's still a fantastic way to reach this audience is through the readership of Billboard and Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. And if they get that Oscar, if they get that Grammy, it's worth, you know, 25, 40, 50% pay raises in the coming years. I was part of that world. Like, I was at Billboard when we did our deal with the Recording Academy. Prior to that, the Recording Academy actually wouldn't let Billboard do these ads. I think it had something to do with the trademark of the Grammy, which, you know, so they were able to like say, no, like our trademark can't appear. Like, it's good for the Grammys in a certain way that everyone is like climbing over themselves or seen as climbing over themselves to like get a Grammy. It underscores how important the Grammys remain to people. It's a really viable model still. And it's one of the, I would say it's one of the few remaining B2B models. Like, once upon a time, the business model of Billboard was almost entirely record labels advertising to record stores. If you were Tower Records or any of the hundreds and hundreds of powerful like indie chains that existed around America that drove the entire music business until, you know, the early 2000s, you were looking at Billboard. You were looking at Billboard to see what the priorities of the labels were, so you would order more of those records to have in your store or whatever. And that was a really viable business for Billboard to be in. And then obviously, as physical records went away and as record stores went away and consolidation happened quickly and overwhelmingly, that business model dried up. This is kind of the model I think that's largely replaced it on a B2B side, is congratulatory ads and ads that are basically begging people to vote for awards.
Right. It really has become the cornerstone of the business. And you brought up an interesting point too about advertising specifically with socials, because we talked about how that disrupted some of these businesses on the consumer side, where a lot of these publications, not just the music ones, but across the board, had lost some of that business because the TikToks and the Instagrams just became so much more targeted. And it was a, frankly, a more efficient space to be able to reach those customers. And you alluded to that potentially happening in the B2B side with these FYC ads. Do you think that that is the future of like where this goes, where over time we will see more money that's shifted away from these trade publications for FYC and more towards digital ad spend through social media?
I mean, I think it's inevitable that you'll see more dollars continue to go to paid media campaigns around award season. I think the question that I don't know the answer to is like, what does the bottom look like for the traditional outlets? And I suspect the bottom still looks, I think it's probably still a relatively high floor. You know, I think when it comes to these campaigns, if you really think you have a shot to win, you want to leave no stone unturned. as long as these platforms still have a meaningful mind share, and they certainly do, of the industries they're covering, then it's going to continue to be a really valuable bit of real estate come that time of year.
The difference between this and the consumer ads is that part of this is not just the ad reaching the voter, but you also communicating to the rest of the industry that we are pushing this thing. And that's a bit harder to do in a socially targeted way. But if you know that, yes, we're going to be front page of Variety on this day with this campaign, you know that everyone else that's checking Variety will also see that. And I think that is something that consumer advertising probably cares less about to that extent, especially just given when you are operating more a cottage industry type of environment, it's in your benefit that even if award show ratings continue to evolve how they will, I do think that that is a place that these publications will be able to thrive in, and whether it's a Penske-owned publication or a new one.
I definitely agree. I mean, I do think there's statement advertising and then there's effective advertising, and those things aren't mutually exclusive at all, but sometimes they end up that way. You know, when I say Grammy voter, you'd be justified to immediately draw a picture in your mind of someone that looks like me, but older, right? Like, because that's been the history of it. But in reality, the Recording Academy has made enormous strides in recruiting a younger, more diverse voting body. And I do question, are those people more likely to effectively be targeted by advertising through like the Digilog? Or are they more likely to be effectively targeted by, you know, a wraparound print cover in Variety? Every time I go on Instagram, I'm seeing influencers hyping up this particular record and it's well done. That's pretty effective. And now I got to go vote, and what's top of mind? Me now speaking to my friends at labels, my friends at management companies who are driving their spends, I would say, hey, if you're thinking about this, you know, you need to understand that the work the Recording Academy has done to get younger and more diverse, you need to be thinking about that when you're building your campaigns.
I would agree with that. Shifting gears slightly, looking at the way that Penske has acquired a lot of these companies and runs them, you could assume that there could be some opportunities to make things more efficient, whether you're cutting certain redundancies or finding other cost-saving opportunities or just initiatives that may not make sense once they're all under a roof. We talked a little bit about Rolling Stone earlier and where that brand has been, where it sits today. And I think about this moment in 2019 where they launched the Rolling Stone charts. I was like, okay, this is more of an industry play for a brand that has been a bit more consumer-oriented. That's interesting. But then a year later, Penske acquires Billboard and that suite of brands. And now the parent company of Rolling Stone now has access to the main place where the charts live. So then what happens to that one that you had just launched a year ago on Rolling Stone? Obviously, there's a lot that changed in between that year, the pandemic, and a whole shift with these companies. But it makes me think about how one company's decision under this umbrella may affect the others and just certain things that we've seen. And how—
also keep in mind, Penske, I believe Penske and Eldridge share ownership of Luminate, which is what Nielsen
Correct.
Music became. There was always this sort of close but distant relationship between Billboard and Nielsen SoundScan, where, like, you know, once Billboard was spun out, and at different times throughout Billboard's history, like, it was different owners. So Billboard was licensing all of this data from Nielsen SoundScan in order to create these charts. They had exclusive license, right? But it was very expensive. There's a whole history there, by the way, where like Billboard turned down the opportunity to acquire SoundScan super cheap in the early days. But yeah, I mean, I think it's another example, certainly, of the consolidation that goes on, right? Like, I think it's actually healthier for the business to have multiple charts. But when one company ultimately is essentially owning all of these brands that would be the home for the charts, it doesn't make sense to pay for the infrastructure to have all these different charts. I remember when I was out at Billboard, I had conversations with Jay Penske once or twice, and I found him to be like refreshingly level. Like, he was not a guy that was caught up in the hype. To talk to Jay at that time, and also to look at the way he'd been running Variety, I'm going to run this like a sensible business. I'm going to invest where I can see a return. I'm going to, you know, grow organically and steadily. And it was sort of the opposite of some of the things that I've been experiencing over the last couple of years at Billboard. If you want to understand Penske Media, you really obviously need to understand Jay and his approach to to business. You still have some of the same reporters chasing the exact same stories at like different publications and competing with each other. And I think that's very much to the credit of Penske Media. I mean, I think a less intelligent business person would look at that and say, well, we only need one person covering anything to do with music publishing stories. I think Jay tries to run a responsible business. But instead, they've generally left the editorial voices and integrity of these individual platforms in place. Now, on the back end, on the business side, I think there's been a little more consolidation. You know, sales across the different brands, as I understand it, you know, obviously all the backroom, you know, accounting and things like that, where you would absolutely expect it to make a lot more sense. Those are smart things to be doing. And I actually applaud Penske Media for generally keeping these independent voices independent. I actually think the strongest brand there is Music Business Worldwide from a business coverage perspective. And it's, again, basically two dudes. Like, it's Tim and it's, I think, Murray. They represent the lion's share of coverage.
I'd be curious to see where some of these companies would have been without this acquisition or without this controlling stake, because the 2010s were not a kind place for a lot of media companies. We obviously saw the rise and fall of the BuzzFeed, Huffington Post, and the Vice trifecta. You've seen a little bit to an extent with Complex. And although those were all much more consumer focused and they pivoted their models in many ways to respond to Facebook, we know that it's very tough if you're not on either ends of the barbell. You have the smaller independents, whether it's what we're doing here at Trapital or what Jerry's doing at Water Music or what Rob Avila or what you're doing. That model can thrive because you can keep expenses at a certain rate. On the other end, you, of course, have your New York Times and your Wall Street Journals that are just so big and large and institutional that have been able to exist in that way. It can be hard when you're in the middle. And now Penske kind of rolling all of these up becomes a bit of that end of the barbell itself, just being able to have each of them. But I do wonder where some of these publications would have been today if they weren't under the Penske umbrella.
To some extent, it was forced to adapt. Regardless, obviously, within Penske. I think certainly there is value in the peace of mind that comes for staff from knowing that there is more stability, from knowing that like they're working for a company that seems to have a plan and a sensible, like at least a broadly sensible approach to running their businesses. The way that I think Jay generally works when it comes to business, these brands are very much all individually pulling their weight within the company, or there's going to be some tough questions asked very quickly. That's my read, knowing the P&Ls to the extent that I remember them, knowing the way a private company of this size is likely to work, knowing what's been out there about how the company is and isn't capitalized. You know, I don't think Jay's a guy that's going to let one of these brands turn into a giant sucking sound in the room. So, you know, if they could join Penske and be made profitable, then I'd like to think that they could have stayed on their own and been made profitable. But it really does remove the margin of error that understandably exists. It's the last thing I would throw out there is it's definitely an advantage to have all these brands together and to be able to sell across the tonnage of the larger audience, right? When it comes to working with partners, it just opens more doors. It creates more opportunity. I think of all the brands that are in that stable, Rolling Stone would be the one that would be most challenged to be on its own. I think that might be the brand that benefited the most from the acquisition.
And consumer-oriented music coverage and pop culture more broadly has struggled as well. Look at Pitchfork. They recently had some pretty substantial layoffs, and not that they were the same as Rolling Stone. They were less about the broader pop culture politics and more about music criticism. The ones that are more of the trade publications, especially given the annual awards coverage that can take up a third of the year in terms of ad space, that's pretty meaningful.
If you're a media business, you have to be brutally honest with yourself about your value proposition. That's true for like you and me, and it's true for Billboard and Variety, and it's true for the New York Times. The moment you start believing your own bullshit is the moment you go out of business. What is the value proposition of Rolling Stone in an age when artists are communicating directly with their fans all the time, in an age where I don't need anyone to tell me whether a song is good or not? Even if I like other people's opinions, I'm going to find a literally endless supply of them, you know, online and algorithmically curated for me. It's not to take away the beauty and the clarity of great music journalism. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's a niche business.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So before we close things out here, Let's both pick one company that we think is next to get scooped up by Penske Media Corporation.
I mean, I think I'm talking to it right now, right? Like, I think. I think that more nimble, niche, smaller businesses are the future of media. And I think that the space between, you know, sort of sole proprietor influencers and like traditional media companies is like a logical path. If you want to take a more traditional view, I would say the next obvious answer would be Music Ally. They're doing a great job. I could see a merger with Caldecott. Do I think BandLab maybe got overvalued a year or two ago? Has it built a clear revenue model yet? Will it have a clear revenue model, or does it become like, you know, the next SoundCloud, where like a lot of people love it and a lot of people play around with it, but it's not really necessarily that awesome of a business? And if those things are true, like, could you see a partnership between Penske and then like BandLab / NME? Could that make some sense? If I'm Penske, I'm paying attention to that. They're in the data business, right? And anything that creates a chart should be of interest to them. So I'm also sniffing around Chartmetric. The last thing I would wonder about is there a different consumer vertical that they expand into? The obvious place would be, can you get a beachhead in sport? What would that look like? If you control film, TV, and music, the last world to conquer there is sports.
Yeah, I think the sports one is interesting. With the first point that you mentioned, I will say this. I've talked to a friend that runs a business that is run not too different from how Trapital is run. They were proposed with an offer, and the multiple that he told me that Penske Media Corporation had offered them on their business was quite small and a bit laughable in a way where he's like, okay, maybe if I was a struggling business in a legacy brand, it could make sense, but not where I'm at right now. And when I heard that, okay, if that's where they're at, then it wouldn't make sense for Trapital.
This is the problem, right? Like, the scale of those companies doesn't really work for the scale of a company like yours. And they view you essentially as a glorified employee as opposed to, hey, I'm acquiring a business. Because if you actually look at the equity value of your business, and if you actually look at what assets you have, you've built a really good brand that is relatively niche compared to the billboards of the world. And then beyond that, it's like, you can make money by throwing a conference. You can make money by selling a report. But it's not like you have this like archive that creates an annuity the way if we think about like catalogs and music. So it's very tricky to put a value on companies like yours. And ultimately what ends up happening is the offers that a company like Penske is going to make, you look at that and you look at what you're already making on your own and it makes no sense.
I would agree with that. And I appreciate that. I'll give you one that I have in mind for this. This is more an entertainment, but I look at companies like Puck or even The Ankler to some extent and what they've been doing in entertainment and covering the business of Hollywood. They're a bit of that hybrid where it's not just one person. There's a small team. They've all raised outside funding now and they clearly want some type of exit. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that IPO is the future for either of them. I don't think that Google or any of like the big FANG companies is, but it's probably going to either be, if they do get to an exit, one of the bigger publishers, whether it is like a New York Times and how we saw them acquire The Athletic, or it would be a Penske that comes in and acquires them. And especially because of how much those businesses have latched on to FYC for the Academy Awards. So
I think you're, that's my I think I love that. And I think it's very consistent with the model. Here's one question for you though, right? Like talking about the size of these entertainment industries, at the end of the day, we've been talking about Penske Media, like the 900 pound gorilla in the room, but Penske Media is like, you know, in terms of like actual company size in the world, it's like a gnat on the ass of a cow on the side of a road that you drive by going 70 miles an hour. Right. Like, so I think the bigger question is who acquires Penske Media? Right. Like, cause I, you know, again, if you're sitting there and your game is, let's say, for example, China or Saudi Arabia, and you are heavily invested in winning the culture wars, you're heavily invested in shaping public opinion about you and the companies that you have a lot of say over, suddenly I think probably the price of Penske Media looks very attractive because compared to, you know, even if you put a nice, healthy multiple on Penske Media, I think it remains highly acquirable by the Saudi dollars. I think it remains highly acquirable by Tencent Media. I think it remains highly acquirable by maybe even Universal Music Group, although I think that might raise some eyebrows from a regulatory standpoint. I mean, do you see Penske selling in our next like horizon?
I think you bring up an interesting point with the Saudi money. They did it with sports washing. This is entertainment washing. Obviously, I'm not advocating for it, but if you are trying to entertainment wash, would you not try to capture the mindshare of where all the decision makers in entertainment spend their time?
Well, and that's just it, right? Like for some of these entities, buying a company like Penske, it's not even about would the company be profitable. It's not even about does this company have a strong financial future, although that's a nice throw-in. It's about this is a marketing cost. If you're Saudi Arabia and you're trying to win the hearts and minds of Americans as they think about entertainment, if you're trying to influence the way people are going to perceive you, Penske Media is a marketing cost. Snapping that up is a marketing cost. And yeah, I think it's a marketing cost that'll come with a reasonably, you know, revenue predictable business. But you don't even have to view it as like a profit center. And that's scary to think about, but I think it's also probably not wrong to think about.
Yeah. I would agree. And with that, we should close things out. Yeah. Bill, this was a lot of fun. We'll definitely have to have you back on. I think we touched on a few topics that we're going to earmark and follow up on at some point in the future.
Dude, I'm thrilled to be the Trapital Media correspondent for a day. It's been awesome, man. I'm such a big fan of what you do. I think it's so important. So keep on doing it, man.
Appreciate you.
Cheers.
Take care. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.